It is crucial to support the principles on which Europe stands, that borders cannot be changed by force, that war criminals must not escape justice, and that the aggressor must pay fully for the war he started. And this is why decisions on Russian assets are essential.
You know how they do a lot of the AI videos where you can like pretend you're certain people. You can actually look like you're Barack Obama and you can say whatever you want. And the video will look like it's Barack Obama speaking in his voice and all that kind of stuff. If I told you that this was a modern day version of that, where Volodymyr Zelensky was mouthing the words that were spoken by the victorious allies in World War I, talking about the defeated Germany and how they were going to pay reparations and stuff, it would have been indistinguishable. Because that's how he's talking. That's the statement he's using. That's the language he's using. That's the imagery that he's trying to bring. One of power, talking to a defeated, vanquished foe, except it's on the other end. It would be as though we had the juxtaposition there, and it was actually the defeated Germans who were making these bold statements. Of course, they would have been mocked and laughed off the stage as the allies said, yeah, it doesn't matter what you say. We have the power. We will impose upon you, the defeated foe, what we want. Now, obviously, we can argue about how unwise that was, but nevertheless, the big point is here, this is so dysfunctional and just weird. I mean, if I can just use that terminology here, because Ukraine is short on manpower. They're short on ammunition. The entire West, writ large, is short on the key ammunition parts, especially interceptor missiles, offensive missiles, artillery, armored vehicles of all the different categories, and really anything else, to include even drones. All the stuff that you can put together, most importantly, including the manpower, are on the deficiency side, on the Ukraine side, and on the Russian side. As we've talked about many times, everything is on the top. Manpower, most importantly, defense industrial base, ammunition supplies, stockpiles, missiles, drones, fighter jets, everything you can imagine, air defense systems, much, much more robust on the Russian side and growing. So you would just not expect that the guy who President Trump is trying to get this war over with in this 28-point peace plan, the one who could benefit the most from the war coming to a rapid end, is the one who is now boisterous in saying, no, we're going to keep fighting until we get all these things that we want, even though he has no power to bring it into fruition. So that's kind of the context that this is going in. One of the reasons why the Trump administration is having such a hard time trying to bring this thing to a head and to try to bring it to fruition, because of resistance, not from the Russian side, we're going to get to that in a minute, but from the Western side, and especially the Ukraine side. Maybe not especially, maybe also, maybe equally, the Ukraine and the European side. They both continue to push back against Trump because they just don't want it, and they are unwilling to just detach from reality to detach from their fantasies, to embrace reality and acknowledge that everything that goes into war making, everything that goes into deciding which side will win a war of attrition in human history. We're not even talking about the modern era, really. It's really in human history. The fundamentals that go into which side wins war are remarkably consistent, even though technology has radically changed over the centuries. But the fundamentals remain the same, and they are in effect now, and they will impose their will, no matter what anybody wants to say and how boisterous you say it, how much, you know, slick words you put on videos and how much cool camera angles and music and all that kind of stuff, which the Ukrainians are really good at. None of that is going to change the reality on the ground. And that's just how this is going to work out. But that's where we are today. And until that final day comes, the fiction will continue to go on, because most of the American public and the Western public are falling for this. I'm just going to call it what it is. They believe it. And as I'm discovered from talking to some sources in both the UK and the United States here just in the last few weeks, to one in the UK earlier this morning, there are people at the highest levels in these governments that actually believe the fiction and think that Russia is on the ropes, and that just a little bit more effort and it will be the Russians, not the Ukrainian side, not the side that's on the deficiency in every category I just mentioned, but somehow it's the guys who were on the superior side will collapse if just we keep going a little bit further. Now, much of that is just ignorance and just unwillingness to acknowledge anything and just saying we'll cling to what we want. Some of it, of course, is pernicious. Some of the people who are proffering these kinds of narratives know exactly what's going on, and they're intentionally deceiving their own people and their own military and political leaders because they don't want them to recognize reality and end this war because of whatever nefarious purposes they have. They want the war to continue on because somehow they calculate there's a benefit to them, irrelevant and inconsequential to what happens to the Ukrainian people. But that's where we are. So that's half of the equation. The other half of the equation, Vladimir Putin also made his own comments this week. And he says, oh, by the way, we're still willing to talk, but by the way, this time there is an or.
As I understand, they decided that all 28 points should be grouped into four separate components. We received all this information. In general, we agree that the US-backed peace plan can be used as a basis for future agreements. But it would be impolite on my part to speak about any final versions, because there are none. Ukrainian troops must withdraw from the territories they hold, and then the fighting can cease. If they don't leave, then we shall achieve this by armed means.
It's just categorical, just cut and dried. We're willing to negotiate. We're willing to have a discussion to where we bring this war to a diplomatic end in the near term. We could do it in a few weeks, probably, if both sides were willing to do. But then he adds, or we'll just continue to go forward militarily until we conquer all the territory that we need. That's just what they're saying. They're saying, this is where we're going. And now, you can hear these two dueling narratives. And if you just were looking at the narratives alone, if you were just looking at the video, you would think, okay, well, the Ukrainian leader was a little bit even more boisterous and a little bit more decisive and confident in his video statement. And then here's this, you know, Vladimir Putin saying some pretty confident stuff too. What are we to believe? How can we know? Because both sides are saying this, and one side's telling the truth, one side's not. One side's delusional, one side's not, or who knows what, for people who are not paying that much attention. Of course, that's the intention, unfortunately, and that's the desire. But when you look at the reality on the ground, there is only one side whose confident statements are associated with the truth and the reality on the ground, and that, of course, is the Russian side. And it still surprises me to a certain extent that the Russians are still saying they're willing to have a negotiated settlement. But I kind of agree with Larry Johnson on our show earlier this week, where he said he doesn't think that they actually believe that anymore, that they're just saying, hey, we're going to continue showing, which we have from the beginning. And earlier in this war, Russia definitely was interested in a negotiated settlement that would have been, in comparison, radically better for the Ukrainian government and definitely for the Ukrainian people. Especially before, you could go all the way back to the Minsk agreements and the things that the Russians were willing to do there, and the control that the Ukraine side would have had over all of its territory minus Crimea. And in fact, if you go back to the 2014 deal that was struck that should have resulted in new elections during the Maidan stuff, the Russians were in agreement to have new elections have in May of 2014. This is on the 20th, I believe, of February 2014. That would have left Kiev, understand this, not a lot of people know this. If that agreement had been left in place and there had been early elections, so just a few months hence from that time, there would have almost certainly, it's a virtual guarantee, there would have been a Western-oriented government, and that government in Kiev would have had control over the entire country to include Crimea, all of it, if only they had let actual democratic norms flow and actually listen to let the people vote. People in the East would still have been unhappy because they wanted the previous government. They didn't want it, but they would have been democratically defeated at the election, at the polls. And all evidence shows that they would have grumbled, but they would have abided by it. And then they would have tried to do better in the next election, etc. But the West didn't want to do that. So they sabotaged that deal. And then it was just a couple of months later, maybe in a couple of weeks later, actually. I think it was March. So it was just a matter of weeks that Russia said, okay, we see that this is not going to work out, and now you're going to continue to move NATO into Ukraine. There's no way we're going to allow our Black Sea Fleet in Sevastopol to fall in under NATO control. So then he annexed the whole thing. So that started the process. Then you had the 8 years basically of civil war, and during the Minsk agreement starting the following year from that first decision, is that Russia said, okay, we'll stop supporting the conflict here except on a low level defensive level, and we'll work on this Minsk agreement, which will then eliminate all the fight, no more military support, and Ukraine, Kiev would have stayed in charge of everything in the Donbas, all of it, all the way up to the Russian border, if they had followed the rules. But they didn't want to. They didn't want to go down the diplomatic path. And then, of course, we know the last chance came in December 2021, when we know, because Jens Stoltenberg has admitted it absolutely openly and said, yes, Putin told us that NATO in Ukraine was the non-negotiable and there would be war without that. And we said, of course, we didn't sign that. So, of course, we got the war. Putin did exactly what he said he would do, and we had the war. And then, of course, in February or April, the next opportunity for negotiated settlement, and then ad infinitum all the way through to where we are today. Every time we've had a chance for negotiated settlement, and it's not accepted, the conditions for Ukraine get worse and worse and worse. Why would any rational thinking person believe that this time, after all the massive casualties, the destruction of Ukrainian cities and the loss of the territory, that this time it's going to be different? Even though anyone can see that the balance of power has only increased dramatically from where it was I mean, let's go all the way back, 2014, and then 2015, 2022, and today. The balance of power continues to shift in the Russian side. And now then you want to think that today, with the balance much worse than it was in the beginning of this conflict, that somehow it's going to work out now? It's just irrational. But that's where we are, folks. A lot of people have that view. Now, something else happened this week that was made public anyway. It's been bubbling under the surface for a while, but it really blew up this week here, that could potentially upset the whole situation anyway, and could eventually result in this war coming to an end, whether anybody in the West wants it or not. And that is a political scandal that exploded in Kiev about corruption. And there was, I guess it was a week or so ago, we had one of Zelensky's right-hand men, or one of his left-hand men, one of his close associates that was fled the country because he was being investigated for corruption. Very close ties to Zelensky. Well, this week it was his right-hand man, Andrew Yermak, and Larry Johnson laid that out for us.
It's not allegations. They've actually got evidence that billions of dollars, up to $48 billion, diverted from USAID out of $360 billion over the last almost 4 years. The money went into banks in Estonia, Latvia, up in the Baltics. You wonder why Kaja Kallas of Estonia thinks it's so essential to keep this war going, because that money keeps rolling through. Anyway, a lot of that money was diverted into and wound up in banks in the Caribbean, you know, like Cayman Islands, that kind of place. And there were payments made to at least 23 members of the U.S. Congress, both members of the House of Representatives and Senate. And so all I got to do is just sit down and make a list. Who are the most vocal senators and congressmen regarding the war in Ukraine? And guarantee you, they're on the list of people getting paid.
I was communicating earlier today with somebody who has direct ties to the administration in Kiev, and they say that this is having an earthquake-type reaction among the people in Ukraine. They're concerned that this could literally bring the whole regime down. How do you see it?
Oh, yeah, I absolutely agree with that. During my last trip to Moscow, I met with a former Ukrainian prosecutor and with the former prime minister, Azarov, of Ukraine, who left office in 2014 after the Maidan. You know, and they were both saying that this corruption is deep, it's endemic, it's tied into the oligarchs who've been, you know, using this as another way for them to make money. So this right now is, Zelensky doesn't have a lot of allies to fall back on. He's actually relying upon Europe to try to save his bacon. So this is coming to a head, and people who think that he's going to survive this political crisis and he'll be around for another 2 years, no, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, and it continues to worsen here, and apparently from some who are talking on the inside saying that Andriy Yermak is really upset that he's being cut loose. And Zelensky, in a speech, said, yeah, he's been removed from his position, because he wasn't just Zelensky's right-hand man. He wasn't just a guy who was helping him, you know, with all of his domestic and international policies. He was also their lead negotiator. So now then that's been replaced by a guy named Budanov, who, by the way, Umarov, who is also being examined for potential corruption. And so you're replacing one corrupt guy with another one under investigation. So that just tells you the nature. I mean, you can't have anybody who's not under some kind of major investigation. I mean, a significant number of the leading group here, of the leaders of the country. And one has to just ask, you know, at what point does the West finally say, okay, we keep using all these words about democracy? You remember all this stuff from this whole war has been about, you know, we're going to uphold the freedom and democracy, and the, you know, these guys are the ones that are, you know, trying to fight for what we are. They're trying to defend us and our values as a Western alliance. What is the value then, may I ask? Because it kind of looks like it's about cash. I mean, that's what it looks like to me. When you see people that are corrupt at this level, and believe me, folks, believe me, the people in the highest levels of UK, MI6, CIA, the White House, 10 Downing, they know what's been going on. They know that there's been a lot of corruption going on. So this is not new to them. It's just now it's made it out into the public. At what point do we finally just say, all right, we're not even going to pretend like we're actually, you know, going for democracy and morality and the rule of law, all this kind of stuff, and just say, yeah, we just hate Russia. And so we're going to go after it no matter what. And we're going to tolerate all these guys. And you know, and just think also about the money that's involved here, because it doesn't come out of nowhere. It's money that could be used in all of these different countries where it's coming from. And they're spending it ostensibly and allegedly to defend the heroic fighters of Ukraine. And to be clear, the actual fighters in Ukraine who are being sacrificed on the altar of whatever it is that they're trying to do in Brussels, they are fighting heroically, and they deserve, and they have my highest admiration and respect. It is astounding what they have accomplished under the circumstances here, but their circumstances can't end up positive. So when you see all these guys from Brussels, London, Paris, Washington, et cetera, when they just keep going down this path of shoveling out the cash and knowing that a ton of it is not going to actually defending the troops on the ground, not providing what they need to actually fight, but it's actually going into somebody else's pocket. And apparently, at least lots of allegations that a lot of it is in Zelensky's pocket. Now, I can't validate that myself. All I can tell you is what's being read. But when you see guys at the highest level, and don't forget the defense minister, I want to say it was about the year and a half mark of Ukraine, had already resigned because of a corruption scandal, been fired, actually. No, he wasn't resigned. He had been fired by Zelensky for corruption. So this is not new. At the highest levels I'm talking about. Now it's come out from their internal sources, and there's a lot of speculation of why it burst out. Now, was it something that some Western leaders are saying, hey, we're using this to try to get your attention, to get you to have a negotiated settlement, or whether it's just some people inside Ukraine that just said, finally, we've had enough, and I don't care what anybody says, here's the truth. Unknown at this point. There's evidence it could either be either one of those, so we'll have to wait and see how time works out on that one. But the bottom line is that we do know for certain that this stuff is out there right now. So we can't claim we don't know anymore. And the Western countries can't claim that this is all about democracy when you see it's all about corruption and all about cash at the highest levels, certainly. So now we have to decide, what are you going to do about it? Are you going to continue to turn a blind eye? Are you going to continue to say, well, it's just the cost of doing business, and especially because some of our guys benefit from the cost of this business, so works for me. I think you know where it's probably going to head, but that's not where it should be going.